Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 423, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. I'm joined today by Rob Berger from SoHoTechColumbus.com. How you doing again, Rob?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jeff.
Good to have you on the show. So you had sent me an email probably a week and a half or so ago, and you said you had some things that were happening in your shop and things that you're doing and things you wanted to talk about. So hopefully everybody knows Rob at this point, and they've heard your backstory. So go ahead and with the information you have.
Okay, sure. Great. Well, I hope this is as exciting or interesting or motivational to everybody as it is for me. And especially because in the past few episodes, I'm not sure when this is going to air. We're about the middle of March when we're doing this session right now. But there's been a lot of talk about expanding services, learning new skills, you know, finding new ways to solve problems and keeping the fun in the job. Because if we're just working in a corporate job or we're doing something else where it's a job and it's not fun, then you lose that spark. And I had a situation come up, and what I'm going to tell you about is it really intrigued me. And I'll go ahead and tell you the story. Is what happened is I had somebody who called me, and it was a new customer, and he was a DJ. And he had 125,000 karaoke files that he had, I'm assuming he purchased. We didn't talk about the source of the data. I think I don't know. I don't even know the karaoke industry, so I'm not sure where one would get these kinds of things. But let's just say that he had all these 125,000 karaoke files, and they were zipped. And inside each of those zip files was a configuration file and the MP3 file. And he needed those extracted. And I thought, this sounds great. Something new. It's a challenge. I'm definitely up for it. So he brought me the source Western Digital external hard drive as well as a target drive. And the first thing I noticed was that they were specifically formatted for Mac. All of my machines work on are Windows. So that was kind of the first challenge. Well, did some research, and I sent you some of the information in an email. Maybe you can put it up in the show notes. But I found a great tool from Paragon, which is a free tool, which allows Windows machines to read HFS drives. So it can read Mac drives. And it works in Windows 8, and all of my systems are Windows 8. So it was great. So installed that utility, rebooted, and I was able to read the source drives.
Nice.
The next thing I discovered, so that's great. So that's now in my arsenal. So if there's ever an instance where I need to recover files from a Mac drive or do anything else with a Mac system besides hardware replacements that I've done in the past, then I can actually get in and do that. So expanding the knowledge a little bit, expanding the skill set, expanding the tools, and keeping the challenges there. So the next hurdle that I discovered was that there was the most confusing multi-layer depth of nested folders and subfolders. You know, I was kind of hoping that they would be at a top level, some sort of reasonable sense of organization. But these were, you know, sometimes buried 10 or 15 layers deep.
Oh, my.
So I had originally thought that, well, I can, you know, use some of my old school command prompt scripting and I can copy all the files. But no. So I needed to figure out a way to copy all of the files, but I don't want to replicate this Byzantine immense folder structure that makes no sense, not only to me, but also to the customer. So I talked to him and I confirmed my plan of, you know what, let's just, how about I create a folder and label 36 folders, 0 to 9 and A to Z. And if the file starts with 0, because some of them were, or if this, you know, the zip file starts with, you know, Q or G or whatever the letter is, then I'm going to copy it regardless of where it is in that source location, to those target 36 folders. So he was good with that. And I was looking for a way to crawl that folder structure and yet copy the file not to that same folder structure. So I tried some of my old school favorites of using Xcopy or copy just built into Windows. That didn't work. Looked at RoboCopy. That didn't work. Finally found a tool called XXCopy. And I used that, and there's a great parameter that you can use, which is SG. And that allows you to copy into a flat hierarchy in the target location. So I was able to wildcard, you know, one *.zip, have it crawl the entire source drive structure and send that to my one folder on the target drive. And I repeated that 35 times for the rest of the numbers and the letters. So that was great. Now I had all of those zip files that were from the source directory on the source hard drive copied to the target hard drive. And obviously, if there were duplicates in there, they had, you know, overwritten and erased each other, which was fine. Out of the 125,000, I think there ended up being, I don't know, maybe 120,000, something like that. So there were a fair number of duplicates. But
oh, wow. Okay.
You would have never found it based on the labyrinth maze of folder structure. So those were all copied. And all told, it was probably close to about a terabyte.
Okay.
So there was a tremendous amount of data, and it was just copying and copying and copying. And I had my script, and it was going. So there was very little time on the keyboard. It was more of a thought exercise. And that's what really the point of the story is that I enjoyed it because I was able to pull my knowledge and skills for scripting as well as discover these other tools that are available. And it was something new. I mean, I think I don't even want to shudder to think about what the dollar per hour that I earned from it for charging him. I definitely undercharged him, but he gave me a great sob story for a DJ, and I took it more for the intellectual challenge.
Sure, exactly.
So once I had all of the terabyte of files, 120,000 files in my source directory, I knew that my unzip script was going to have problems because I could see just in a handful of a cursory glance that there were special characters in these folder names. Most notably, that there was an apostrophe. So if I tried to do anything where I was scripting the unzip command, that apostrophe was going to kill me. So I found a tool called Bulk Rename Utility, and I sent you the link for that. And this is a great tool. It's a free tool, but a donation is requested. So if you're interested in that, and also going back to XXCopy, that's free for personal use, but they do request that you purchase it for professional use.
Okay.
And then going back to the HFS Plus, that is free for Windows 8. So Bulk Rename Utility is fabulous. You can eliminate prepended characters, appended characters, you can remove special characters, you can replace character strings, you can assign dates. It is a fabulous tool. And I was able to run it just one directory at a time and watch to see how it was cleaning up all of the files. So I used that to eliminate all of those special characters that I knew were going to cause me a problem in the next step.
Wow, okay.
So yeah, you're still with me there?
I'm still with you. You know what? It sounds like you found definitely a way to, you know, with a lot of automated tools to make your job a lot easier.
Yeah, I did. And it's probably something that I will never use again. But each of the individual components, I think, could be useful in a separate instance, as long as you kind of keep that in your back pocket of tools that you're familiar with. And I enjoyed it more of, you know, the thought process of, he's got 125,000 files in a gajillion folders. How do I get them into a usable format for him?
Sure.
In the target drive. So then the final step was I had all of the zip files with the special characters removed. They're all organized so that all of the B files are in the B folder, all of the G files are in the G folder, and I need to do the unzipping. So I got rid of all of the duplicates, and also I eliminated the empty directories. so that wouldn't just clutter everything up. And I used a great old school unzip tool from Stahlworks, which was a free program. And that allows you to specify the zip file that you want to unzip as well as specify the target.
Okay.
So going old school with some dir commands from a command prompt, I was able to list out the contents of every one of those folders. And sometimes there were as few as zero files that happened to be in that folder, which is fine. And some of the more larger folders, the S's and the T's, there were 50,000 files, 50,000 zip files in there. So there was a huge range. There was a huge range where, you know, I knew, all right, this is going to chug for a few hours. I'll come back and check on it later. So taking those dir commands to script out and find the contents of the directory and then execute that command so that all of the zip files were extracted into their own folder. And that was something that the customer had indicated as a requirement, that in order for his karaoke program to work, I can't just have all the zip files loose with each other and the configuration file. I need to have the zip, or rather the MP3 file and the configuration file that goes with it in its own folder. So I needed to create 125,000 folders, but needed to have some reasonable organization to them. So that's what I did as part of the scripting. So the end result was there were 36 folders from 0 to 9 and then A to Z at the top level on the target drive. And then within each of those folders, as many folders as there as required. And within each of those folders, which were based on the song name, there was the MP3 for the song, as well as some sort of configuration file that his karaoke software required. So all in all, it took a lot of hours, and I'm sure it was, pennies for the time. But the fun part was it was something new. It was expanding services. It was providing service to a customer who had a very specific need. The way that he explained it to me at the very beginning was, okay, this is an unusual request. I'm a DJ. I have these files on a drive, but I've been unzipping them one at a time, and I have a lot to go. Can you help? So I want to help. So I say, you know, maybe I bit off more than I could chew by saying, yes, I'm definitely going to try to help you. But it became providing service to the customer, which I'm sure if he ever needs anything in the future, he'll give me a call, as well as, you know, building my skills and using not only old skills that I have, but building new skills and finding new tools. So when and if anything ever comes down the road of, large files and repositories and copying or moving or unzipping or renaming any of those kinds of subtasks, then I definitely have the tools to take care of that.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah. So it sounds like you had a lot of, 125,000 zip files. That just seems like an awful lot. So the program, I'm just trying to figure out, why were these files zipped in the first place? I mean, obviously he needed them unzipped so his program could read them, right? I mean, who zipped them?
I don't know, and I don't want to ask. It's kind of like, once I know, then I'm an accessory. Or even if he told me he bought them from somewhere, at a certain point, I don't care, and it's none of my business. whether he got them from his Aunt Judy, or he bought them on a website, or he's part of, this clandestine karaoke ring. Who knows?
Gotcha. So yeah, that is a unique thing that you probably will not run into again. But a lot of the tools that you brought to the table are tools that you actually can use for different things that you do in your business, I'm sure.
Sure, absolutely. I think that, if you're in a corporate environment where you find a user has named and numbered their files in a bizarre way, or maybe they want to name and number them in a bizarre way, you could use that rename utility to, add or strip off a date based on when the file was last modified or when the file was created, something along those lines. The Mac mounting utility is great for me and possibly for other people, so that you can work with Mac formatted drives, if even though all you have is Windows in your shop, as I do.
Exactly. And I actually ran into that where I actually couldn't help somebody out because I had no way to read. Now, mine was a little different case scenario, but they were video drives. They plug into the computer, but they were the Mac format. So when I had gotten them, number one, the only way you could hook them up was FireWire, which I could have done on my machine. But as far as reading the files, everywhere that I had read at the time, there was no way that I could read the information on there. And they just wanted a backup copy of those, basically. But now it sounds like there's a couple pieces of software out there that can actually do that. So that's good. And it was probably, I mean, it's been there for a long time. It's just not something that I looked into for myself because it was one of those one-off scenarios. I was like, they needed it done like right away. And I didn't spend a whole lot of time trying to research it. I looked it up and I didn't find any, good information because everybody else in their business, the TV business, basically they all had Macs. And so they just plug it into their MacBook or whatever, and they would copy the files over, and it was simple. This certain employee they had working for them, they would only buy her a laptop, a Windows laptop. so she had no Mac software there. So this is good to know.
Yeah, and also, I can see a good use for XX copy. So if I'm working with a residential company, residential customer, and they have a ridiculous number of photos, let's say, for example, scattered about in their, my pictures directory, as well as on the desktop, as well as in the documents, and they just say, I want them all in one spot. How are you going to search for star.jpg? With XX copy, you can do that. You can, crawl through an entire user profile. Hopefully you're not going to go into the temporary internet files and grab that whole cache. But, that's an instance or a use case where you could go through and find all of their Word documents. You could find all of their pictures. And then you could aggregate them into a single location.
Yeah, that's good because, even if you're using your automated backup programs to back up the normal user files, There are times that for whatever reason, people have put stuff under their C drive under some weird file folder name that you would never think to look for. And it's like, how did this get here? And a lot of times I think that those probably get there because people somehow clicked on it by accident and dragged it over and didn't realize what they were doing and dropped it. And it's there and they can get to it because a lot of programs will just search for things like JPEGs when they, galleries and stuff like that. That's all they need to see the JPEG. But when you're looking at it to back it up, you absolutely have to check all the different spots on a computer to make sure that you're not getting rid of something, especially if you're doing something like a nuke and pave.
Sure, absolutely. And if you're using iTunes or Dropbox or something where you plug in your camera or your phone and it automatically starts importing your data, you may not have chosen wisely the first time you configured where that target location is, or you may not even realize that there's a duplicate of all of those files. So once you copy them to your My Documents, they also exist in the local cache for Dropbox or for, iTunes Music or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the hard part about, doing backups. That's why I'm becoming an advocate of basically doing an image on drives anymore, just to make sure that even if you don't have everything, that you can always go back into the image and find whatever it is you missed.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, there's many different ways to do that. But that's that's one story there. I'll tell you what, it's definitely a learning experience, and it's nice that you were able to take that and learn from it and actually take the time to do it. Even though, like you said, a lot of times we don't make money or we don't make a whole lot of money doing what we do when we're learning, but at least we learn something new.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I have to tell myself that, otherwise I would cry over how much time I spent on it. Because here's the kicker. The first time I did it, I extracted all of the MP3 and I think they're CDG files to the same root directory. And then I gave him the drives back, and he said he tried to index it or scan it with the software. It didn't work. They all have to be in their own individual folders.
Oh.
So I did the entire thing twice.
Okay.
And he gave me a little extra money the second time. But still, it was I don't want to calculate the hours. I'm figuring it's a learning experience. It was customer service. You know, all of those, you know, good deeds were stacking up. And hopefully I'm building some karma for later.
Right. Exactly. Well, and like you said, I think you've made a good customer, though, that if something happens with his machines or whatever, he's going to come back to you. And when he needs something fixed, he'll be able to get that service done because now he has a rapport with you. He has a trust in what you went above and beyond what somebody else might do. They go, yeah, you're on your own.
Yeah. I don't, you know, yes, I agree with you, but I have a nagging feeling. And maybe this is kind of the same thing when people drop off machines to people who have a retail shop or, you know, when you take machines home to work on them, is that they don't know how much effort it took. I mean, he may just think, oh yeah, you know, it took a couple hours and Rob was able to do it. It works great. And he has no idea. It took me, you know, add some decimal places to that for the number of hours it took, you know, move that to the right. And, it was a lot of time. Even if it wasn't time on the keyboard, it was machines running overnight, copying, extracting, you know, all of those different iterative steps. When you had some of those big folders, like the S's or the T's or the G's or whatever they were, and there's, you know, 44,000 files in there, and it's got to go through and process every single one of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
push start and go to bed, and it'll be ready in the morning.
Well, you know, and I think a lot of us got to get past that point of where, you know, the way I look at it now is you're paying me not necessarily to do a task. You're paying me for my expertise, my learning, the things that, you know, I've done to get to the point where I'm at. So regardless of whether you know how much goes into it or not, you know, I'm still going to charge you accordingly because, you know, yes, can you get it done cheaper? Sometimes. But I also know that those people that are, you know, necessarily doing it cheaper, they're not going to be around for the long haul. So eventually, sometime down the road, you're going to end up coming to me, you know, versus going to, let's say, a big box store or something like that. Because if you don't want to pay my prices now, you're definitely not going to want to pay a big box store's prices.
Yes, definitely. And that's the kind of thing where I think if you took that into one of those stores, they would look at you and just say, no, we're not doing that.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's so niche that they would go, no, that's not what we do here. Well, I don't know, though. You know, a Best Buy might, but they're going to charge you $199 for, you know, a service contract for a year.
I think they would say, nuke and pave? No? Oh, we don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Nah, I shouldn't say that. I take that back. We'll go back and erase that.
No, I think there's a lot of good techs there, too. But you know, a lot of times their hands are, you know, held by what the company wants done. And, you know, and what's going to make them profitable. So unfortunately, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, we're the guys that are out here, guys and gals that basically do the one-off stuff that you really can't find, you know, everybody to do because not everybody's going to take that time and effort to do that. So, you know, I think it's good.
Absolutely. I have new stuff. I'd say almost every very little repeat issues with customers. I've had, even in the past 2 to 3 weeks, so many instances of, well, that's new. I've never, you know, had somebody had this problem before. You know, and that's refreshing. That's what keeps it fun. That's what keeps it challenging. It's not just, you know, a chore. I don't get to leverage necessarily all of my processes and my lists that have long been discussed on the podcast. I do have them; they're written out. I've modified the TechNibble business kit to give me the forms that I need. But so many times it's just, huh? Well, that's interesting. You've managed to break this in a new way.
Right, right. And a lot of times, yeah, that's, you know, I explain to a lot of customers that, you know, when they come in for like a virus removal, I tell them, I said, listen, you've been infected for probably well over a year. I said, and here's what happens. I said, the viruses and things and malware are made to basically sit in the background quietly and not bother you really, because what they want to do is they want to communicate whatever it is that they're communicating back to the mothership. And I said, the problem is most of these are built on bad code. And what happens is when all these are put on the system, when you have more than one, they start to fight amongst themselves. And because they start to fight amongst themselves, all of a sudden they start breaking Windows. And all of a sudden Windows is really slowing down and, you know, other things are happening. You can't do updates and different things. But really, they would love just to sit in the background and do their job because they don't want to be discovered.
Sure. And it's funny. When I will get spam mail, and it's kind of a treasure hunt to figure out, okay, what names in the, you know, in the two or in the CC line do I recognize from other customers or family members that, you know, maybe a family member of a customer, so I can figure out which of my customers just got their, you know, address book harvested.
Right.
You know, because I'm in there, so I'm getting the spam mail and it appears to come from, you know, Evelyn or Tom or whoever. So that's always kind of, it's not just deleting it. It's, who do I need to call to say, hey, your machine's been compromised, your, you know, Yahoo Mail or whatever it is. Let's try to find a time to clean you up.
Right. That's definitely not a conversation you want to have with a customer, but it's better to do that and, you know, kind of head it off instead of waiting until, you know, until they bring it to you and go, yeah, my Internet Explorer won't start, so I don't know what to do.
I have this new homepage and there's this all these search toolbars.
Yes, yeah. So what other types of things have you been working on in the shop lately? You said, you know, you've had different things coming into the shop lately that are, you know, not always just the norm.
Sure. Well, I've gotten into, and this is kind of one of my goals for 2015 is to get into the Office 365 hosted Exchange migration arena. As other people on the podcast and some of the other PodNuts network podcasts have talked about, you know, that is a great area. And I've been working with Exchange for 20 years. So that's something that I know very well. And the hosted Exchange platform is great for the small law firms that I've worked with, as well as some like some lawn care handyman kind of companies. The all of the benefits of Office 365, and in this case, just specifically hosted Exchange, have been great. And the customers are overjoyed that they don't have, you know, the main problem is I reply on my phone, but then when I go look on my computer, it's not in my sent items. You know, that's a huge part of it, as well as scheduling meetings on shared calendars to know where the various employees are. You know, can this lawyer attend this deposition or this other meeting? No, you know, she's in court that day, something like that. So that is a great area. It is, you know, good money. It's good skills if you know them or if you can learn them. It's very helpful, and I think it's a great value proposition. If you're looking at, you know, starting as low as $5 per user per month, that is tremendous value to a small business that doesn't want to, you know, drop $10,000 on Windows Server, presuming they already have an Active Directory deployment on premise, and then trying to load and configure Exchange, you know, 2010, 2013, whatever the next 2016 version is. You know, doing hosted Exchange is fabulous. And I started with my own account maybe about a year ago, and have since branched out to offering that to customers. So I've done several of those, and those are rewarding. Definitely something that if you decide to get into that area, you're going to need to document your processes so you can figure out, you know, the specific order that you need to do things. I ran into a situation this past weekend and I posted on the forums about it, and it ended up being kind of a big nothing of you just need to wait. But, it, you know, there are some things that you can do to help yourself and kind of catch your mistakes before they happen. And a lot of it is just waiting for, you know, once you've updated the local mailbox for it to sync up to the server. So
gotcha. Okay.
That's something that I'm doing, and it's great fun, and it's I get such satisfaction from seeing the relief and the joy from the customer of this is exactly what I wanted, because I have one person at the office and I'm out on my iPad or on my iPhone, and the other person is deployed in a separate location, and all three of us need to be able to communicate in a single mailbox or a single calendar. So with, you know, your Roadrunner, your whoever your local ISP is, you're going to get a POP account. And even if you get an IMAP account, there's a whole host of problems there. But having the Exchange server-based platform is really great. So I've done those in the past few weeks and few months. I had a woman who called me. She had just moved to the area, so I was very happy that she found me. She had a Surface tablet that she'd managed to get infected with something, so all of her search and her Internet Explorer, like we were talking about, were all messed up.
Oh, wow.
She also had a huge Dell all-in-one unit, which wouldn't even boot. Actually, I take that back. It would boot, but it would just go to a black screen. So I ran the built-in diagnostics and found that there were some critical hard drive errors, and it wasn't even recoverable. It was just beeping furiously at me. So luckily, it was still under warranty. So it was not under warranty. I had to buy a new hard drive, but she did not have the original Dell install disk. And when I called Dell support and said, you know, I'm doing a reinstall, and they said, well, you need to use the disk. And I said, that's why I'm calling you, because we don't have the disk. You know, they confirmed her information and the system service tag, and they ended up sending us the disk. So I did a full reinstall there. There was no data on the drive. It was completely unreadable. So there was nothing that I could copy over. But, you know, that was a fresh install, you know, with a huge, 20, 24-inch all-in-one unit. So that's fun to carry.
Yeah. Now, was that a Windows 8 machine?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
So it was nice that all of the login information between the Surface and the all-in-one unit were synchronized, and I didn't have to, you know, grab all of that. But, you know, unfortunately, she did have some Word documents and some other data on that drive, which unfortunately were unretrievable.
You know, and that begs a question today, because now a lot of people have been to the point where when they set up a new Windows 8 machine, they're not setting up a user account, a Microsoft account. They're setting up a local account. And I'm like, mm-hmm. going, I don't know if that's such a good idea, because I've been taking my customers and basically setting them up with a regular Microsoft account so that if something does happen, at least their settings and things are saved. The other thing is, though, I probably should go above and beyond that, because I do have some customers who are actually using OneDrive the way it was designed to be used, and they don't even care if something happens to their computer because there's nothing on their computer locally. I mean, there is, but it doesn't matter because they can log back into Microsoft on a brand new computer. It doesn't matter, and they're back in their OneDrive and all their files are right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that synchronization, I think that's the first thing that a customer gets reassurance from of, yes, this is my lock screen. Yes, this is my screensaver. This is my wallpaper.
Right.
And, you know, all I have to do is log in with the account that, you know, they gave me that matches the other machine. You know, if you recover a machine, and actually you can do that in FABS, and we can talk about that. But, you know, when you present the customer with a machine and say, here's your machine, and they say, well, it looks different, you know, immediately they're kind of, in my experience, they've been, you know, standoffish of, this looks different. This isn't the way it was before. So if I can give it back to them using those synchronized Microsoft settings from, you know, the Microsoft account for their lock screen, you know, their icons and whatnot, then that really, you know, is the first step of reassuring them, yes, this is your stuff. And unfortunately, in a situation like this, you have to have that, you know, this is like asking the person if they had insurance after the house burns down. And
right.
they say no, and you say, well, now's a good time to get it. You know, in a sense, in a situation there when there's data loss is to say, look, you need to do something. You know, external hard drive, Carbonite, CrashPlan, Mosey, OneDrive, Dropbox, you know, whatever, something. But you definitely want to, you know, and we can talk more about that, you know, in this session, or we can set up another appointment, you know, once you get your machine, you know, back to the way you like it. But we should talk about backups. And that's something that I keep stressing to customers. And I think it's something that is a hard pill to swallow until you need it. And when you need it, it's too late.
Exactly. And that's what I try to explain to a lot of my customers when it comes to backup. I say, you know, do you have a backup system? And whether they do or not, a lot of times it's a local backup. They're plugging in a flash drive, you know, every once in a blue moon. But a lot of times they're, you know, even with a Windows backup, it's set up improperly and it just keeps adding files until it's so full that it won't add any more files. And so a lot of times I go, listen, I said, we really need to set some sort of offline backup at least. So you've got, you know, some sort of safety there. And a lot of people will tell me, well, why do I really need a backup? And I just look at them and go, let me ask you a question. Do you have pictures of your kids, your wedding, blah, blah, whatever, on your computer? Well, yeah. I said, if you lost all those pictures today, would you be bummed? And most of them are like, well, yeah. Well, that's why you need a backup then.
Yeah. You know? The example that I usually say is I kind of wave my hands in front of the monitor and I say, okay, pretend your computer exploded right now. What data do you not have anymore? And they say, well, nothing. Oh, wait. Yeah, I have some pictures. And I say, okay, do you have any like home movies that you know, shot from your iPhone and you copied there, your old style digital camera and they're there. Oh yeah, I have that. And you're using an ISP mailbox, right? Yeah. And you're doing POP, right? Yeah. Okay, so that's all locally on a PST. So that's all gone. And that's all of your addresses and all of your email. Oh, yeah. Okay, so that's gone. And I say, okay, do you have copies of all of your, you know, product keys or serial numbers or anything like that? Well, yeah, I have that with my password file. And I say, and where's that? Oh, on the computer.
Because nobody makes hard copies of that anymore.
Well, I have a lot of customers who have their little address book, you know, their little binder next to the computer, and it's, you know, passwords.
Right, right. Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to have a, you know, easy way to remember those hard passwords, like password.
So. Well, that, depending on the comfort level of the user and how long we've already gone, I'm trying to explain, talk to, train, educate them on password managers. I've started using several months ago LastPass, and I love it. My son actually asked me if I'd heard of one, and he showed me one that he's using. It's been a while. I think it was 1Password. Okay. And I said, oh, yeah, I know that. And it was so funny because about a week prior, I think it was Lifehacker, had a great review of 4 or 5 password managers. They have KeePass on there, which I've used in the past, Dashlane, which I've heard very good things about, and then LastPass and 1Password. And I think RoboForm was in there as well. I'm not sure. But, you know, that concept is so foreign to people. And I'm trying to educate them of, yeah, you don't have to worry about having that little binder next to your computer, because when you travel and you want to get to your bank website and you don't travel with your little password book, it's okay because you can get to all of that. And LastPass is free, which is, you know, maybe one of the few free products that I actually recommend because right. It's just tremendous. And if you really want to splurge and pay for the 2-factor authentication, which can be used on your mobile phone, both iPhone and Android, probably Windows phones as well. If anybody, I'm not sure if anybody has that. it's going to cost you $12 a year.
Right. Exactly.
So absolutely, I'm going to pay for that. It has fabulous capability to automatically log you into websites, to require a password reprompt before websites to allow you to easily change passwords, to automatically detect when you've signed into a web page so that it can save that for you, automatically generate new, you know, super long, you know, variable characters, passwords. It's great. So if you, it's a comforting feeling to me, and maybe this is me being way out there, but the amount of hard drive space in my brain that I have freed up by not having to remember passwords is great.
Oh, absolutely. I've been using LastPass for the at least last couple years, maybe even longer than that. And it's always been just one of those systems that was just really easy. And to be honest, I had to start using something because I have over 200 passwords to remember.
Absolutely.
And there's no way I can do that. And you know, what's funny is I even had my son's Facebook account, you know, whatever reason, at one point had gotten hacked. So we went in and changed his password. I said, all right, he's, you know, 17. Hey, we need to set you up on LastPass. So we're going to make a password. I'm going to keep it in my LastPass under just a secure note so that way, if you forget it, at least we can go back in and look it up on mine. But I said, you know, we're going to set your, you know, we're going to actually give you a real, you know, good Facebook password and so on and so forth. And he's been using it no problem. And it just makes life a lot easier.
It's great. I had a very convoluted, complex system where I was saving my KeePass database in my Dropbox so that I could access it from multiple locations. And it worked great until I realized the fallacy of that is that, well, if somebody gets into my Dropbox, they can copy that file and then they can work on it offline and I'll never know.
Right.
Whereas with LastPass, with the two-factor authentication, whenever anybody, including me, tries to log into a website and it asks, you know, it confirms the master password, it authenticates to, you know, not only the something that I know, which is the password, but it's something that I have, which is my phone. Right. So if I'm not logging into a website and I get a prompt that somebody's trying to log, you know, do I authorize this password, you know, entry, decline, and then I know, all right, somebody has my master password. I need to change that. So I think it's a great product, but I think that concept is just over the head of a significant portion of my client base.
Well, and yeah, and a lot of people are using, let's face it, for the handful of sites that they go to, they might be using the total of three different passwords. And the only thing is that's different is a digit or a letter in those three different passwords. They're all very similar, you know, as far as what I've seen. And it's hard to get people to, it was even a little hard for me to go and make, you know, 16 letter complex passwords with, you know, special characters, you know, lowercase, uppercase, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So in numbers and all that. So, you know, once I got past that, where I'm like going, I don't need to remember these passwords. I have my main password is 32 characters, and that's all I got to remember. And that's once I remember that, I'm good with everything else. So
yeah, once you can turn off the browser settings to remember the passwords, you know, you couple that with the tools that have been talked about on this podcast within the past few weeks and months of, you know, tools that you can use to extract those from the browser when the person forgets, you know, how to log into an account or how to log into their Wi-Fi, you know, after the fact that you've had to, you know, reset those settings. You know, those passwords, you know, the customers like it because it's saved in the browser. It's like, yeah, but you know what? That's not secure.
Right.
So once you can turn those off and clear those, you know, and prevent them from coming back and offering them to save them, and devote yourself, you know, you got to make that jump of, okay, I'm using LastPass or, you know, Dashlane or whichever one you use. I'm using it from now on, you know, clear up my trail of everything before. Every time I'm prompted for a password, I'm going to take it out of my old system and put it in the new system. And that's what I've been slowly doing because I have, you know, a couple hundred passwords just like you do.
Right. Yeah, that's, it's hard to, you know, get that over to people. And I think the other thing too, that you already talked about was dual factor authentication. Any site that you can actually do the dual factor authentication on, you absolutely should have that set up. And most of the time you can have some sort of authenticator on your mobile phone or it can text message your phone, or it can send you an email. There's several different ways to do it, but it just makes it that much more secure. So if somebody is trying to brute force your password, you're at least going to know about it. Because they're going to, hey, did you try to do this? Or, hey, you know, I want to get this changed. And you're like, wait a minute, I didn't do that. So I definitely think, you know, a lot of times people don't do those types of things. I know I had turned off my Google login to single authentication because I was using an app that would post for me. And because Google does not allow their API to go out to third parties, the third party couldn't use it for posting, but it went out and I kind of got a little nervous, even though it was something that was, it was not nefarious. It was just something that had went out to somewhere in Arizona or something and said, hey, are you trying to log in from over here? And I'm like, you know what? I don't need to post there that bad. So I'm going to go ahead and turn that back on. And I did. And I feel much more comfortable with it now, even though I, you know, do I have anything on there that I really care about? But it would just be a pain to try to clean all that up afterwards. So,
yeah. And I think that that's a unique situation, probably targeted mostly for people like us in our sector, where we are doing those kinds of linkages between, you know, sites. You know, for the typical residential or business user, I don't think that applies. You know, when we're updating our websites and we're automatically cross-posting to Twitter and Facebook and, you know, whatever the new thing is today, you know, we may have to have some integration like that. But for the majority of users, all of their sites are independent of each other. And the rule of thumb that I've used is, if losing a password to a specific site can cost me money, so maybe Amazon or my banking website or maybe, sure, you know, financial institutions, you know, I'm going to do a password reprompt on that. If it's a website, you know, TechNibble, PodNuts, you know, something like that, where the most somebody can do is impersonate me and post, you know, but there's no financial implication, then I may be looser with the restrictions for a master password reprompt.
That's a good point. So I'm just sitting here thinking about this. Is this, you know, something that we should be taking our customers and going and actually charging for? You know, hey, do you have dual factor authentication set up on your Facebook account? Well, what's that? Well, I can do this for you for, you know, X amount of dollars, and we can set you up so that you're, you know, you're that much safer. Or is that something that you kind of throw into, you know, just your service? Because I noticed that what I did way back a long time ago was I would try to do everything and give them the kitchen sink when I was doing a, you know, virus removal or a tune-up or whatever. And what I figured out over time was that I was losing so much time because I wasn't charging for my time that it was just a time sink. So what I've started doing is a lot of times when people bring in things for specific problems, whether it be a cracked screen or, you know, a bad hard drive or whatever, I just fix those problems. But I'm not really good at, you know, upselling on some of these other things. And there's a lot of things out there that would protect the customer a lot better, you know? So what's your thoughts on that?
That's interesting. And that's something that I also have struggled with. It's very easy when, you know, we're fixing a virus and we talk about, well, you know, you're running no antivirus or free antivirus. You should really use something a little bit better. Or, yes, I'm sorry you lost all your files due to, you know, your hard drive getting, you know, flooded in the water. Do you have a backup? No. Well, besides doing the reformat and the reinstallation of all your equipment, let's also sell you a back, you know, get you hooked up and protected with a backup. It's hard for, I haven't figured out the proper time and the amount of time to invest in that kind of customer education, as well as, you know, at the base level, you know, how to monetize it of, I'm going to sit and train you for an hour. So I'm going to, you know, charge you an hour's rate to set you up with one of these programs. And please stop using all of your passwords. Let's pick one.
Right.
You know, going back to the Microsoft account, you know, in addition to whenever I set up wireless for somebody, I give them a nice pre-formatted sheet with my credit, with my logo and my contact information, as well as all of their wireless information. I've adapted that as well so that I give them all of their Microsoft credentials. So right. when somebody has an account like that, you know, they have it. Instead of, you know, the number, you know, when it's asking for a password and they say, well, which password is it? And so I say, when you turn the machine on, what password do you enter? And they go like, oh, well, I never turned the machine on. Oh, okay. So, you know, the number of passwords, the local machine password, the password for their email account, the password for their iTunes account, the password for their Gmail account, you know, already that's five. So to ask them to forget that and pick one 20-character password, I think is a hard sell. I think people, at least in my experience, are set in their ways. And until they have an identity theft problem, you know, losing their, you know, Facebook account being compromised, or Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat or, you know, what have you, right. that it's over the heads and just doesn't kind of the, well, that really doesn't apply to me. Kind of a situation. And I'm not saying that in a condescending way, as if we are elite because we use this. It's more of, for the typical user, they don't see the value in it, even if it's free, even if they're not using the two-factor authentication. They right. don't see the value of a password manager, because then they're just going to randomize, you know, make all their other passwords complex, and the master password is going to be password. You're like, oh, you're killing me.
Well, I still think it's a step in the right direction, because, you know, even if their master password is something of the effect of, you know, it has some uppercase, some lowercase, and some numbers in it, that's better than nothing. And, you know, if it cannot be just a word, a dictionary password, that type of thing, which I think a lot of people don't use. Well, there are a lot of people who use dictionary passwords, but I think there's a lot of people that know enough that don't, you know, they do try to complicate it a little bit by either changing, you know, letters for a number instead of, you know, maybe instead of using an L, they might use a one, yeah. you know, things yeah. like that.
The hard part that still causes me anxiety is, for all of the documentation that I give my customers and I say, don't lose this.
Right.
You know what happens to it.
Oh, yeah.
So even, you know, recently, where I had kept copies, and I know there's been a lot of conversation about this, I don't want to be on the hook for losing customer data. So when people pay me by credit card, I don't keep that credit card. When I configure wireless or machine passwords or email accounts or anything like that, I have a separate form that I will print but not save. And I give it to them because I don't want to know their passwords. I'm trying to reduce passwords in my life, not add theirs.
Right.
And so what worries me is that we will work with our customers and get them using one of these password managers and say, you don't have to remember all of your site passwords. This is the one password you have to remember. And they've made all of their other things complex, and then they lose the master password.
That's true. So then that kind of puts you on the hook for, you know, supporting that, because you were the one that basically brought it to them and said, hey, you need to do this. So I think that's a lot of techs. That's where we're at. We don't know. It's like our customers need to be protected, but we don't want to spend the time to protect them because it's such a time sink on us. And if the worst case scenario happens, which it probably will, then how much are we going to work for free?
Well, I think the ROI on that, or the pain point, is if it happens once.
Right. Absolutely.
We talk about, you know, the hosted exchange. Some of the customers want me to retain admin permissions to their hosted exchange account. So if they need to add or delete a user or add aliases or whatnot, then they just call me to do it. I give them all of the documentation so they can go to the portal website and they can do it themselves. But they look at it and they're like, okay, we're going to call you. So in those instances, I keep their admin portal credentials in my LastPass, and it's a crazy long nonsense password, but those are the only passwords that I will keep, and they are protected, like, you know, in that system. They're not right. something vulnerable on my own machine.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense for, you know, for that type of business. You have to have access to that stuff, because you're not going to call up your customer and say, hey, what's the password to your system? You want me to do what? You know, so that makes more sense. I think from a residential standpoint, I think a lot of people are very trusting, which is to a fault of, you know, some things like, you know, the Microsoft scammers, they call you and stuff like that. But I mean, I will have people where I remote in their system and I, you know, I get out. And all of a sudden, I see that they sent me an email that basically says, you know, they've given me unattended access. I'm like going, you didn't need to give me unattended access. But they're like, in their mind, they're already thinking, hey, if I call him again and he needs to get in my system, we don't have to go through this whole process. He can just get in my computer. They don't care. They don't realize that I have unattended access, even though it shows up with my name that I'm taking control of your computer. It's not like it's hidden or anything.
Well, here's what I've done as a middle ground, because I've had that happen as well. From now, and I started this recently once I got on with Instant House Call, is I rename it instead of Get Remote Support. I rename it to my company name and support, and I leave that icon on the desktop. So at the end of a remote session or at the end of an on-site session, I will install that and I will tell them, because I definitely want to make sure they're informed and I don't want it to appear, you know, nefarious or anything. But I'll say, look, the next time we need to have a session, this is here. You can always download it and reinstall it from my website, but it will save us time in the future.
Right.
I cannot connect unless you double click this and I'm at my machine, you know, ready to jump on. So it's here, it's waiting, but I don't have unattended access. It's just going to save us 5 minutes in the future.
That's a good point.
And that seems to have worked well.
Okay. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's one of those, I think a lot of times the customers are looking to us for the answers. The problem is they don't always want to pay for the answers we're giving them. Whether that be our time or, you know, XYZ program, whether it be Carbonite, you know, backup programs, whatever. And, you know, it is a fine line, but most of us, because we really want to help people, we're terrible salespeople. And, you know, I try to tell people all the time, I said, you know what, stop thinking about it like you're selling things. Just offer it. If they don't want it, that's fine. You move along. You know, I don't have to sell anybody anything by giving them a worst case scenario. I explain to them in a nice way, here's what I believe you need. Is this something you want? Here's what it costs. It's a yes or no answer. Either they want what I'm offering them or they don't. And it's nothing against me. They don't, you know, they don't care about that. They just care about, do I want to spend the $40, $50, $60, $70 for this product to do whatever it is that he's telling me it's going to do. And, you know, it's just one of those things that we all need to get better at, because really, if we're really about protecting our customers, then that's the way we need to think about it. Listen, I'm just offering it to you because I want to protect you from the worst case scenarios. That's all.
Yeah. And I think going back to your previous point about, you know, the charging for, you know, it's been a longstanding debate in the forums and elsewhere of, if I can remote into your system and I can fix a problem in 5 minutes, should I charge you an hour or should I charge you for 5 minutes? Now, possibly my experience over, you know, however many years gave me the knowledge and the skill so that I know where to click and so that it only takes me 5 minutes. Whereas if you had gone with somebody else, maybe they would, you know, futz around and then they would find it eventually. You know, so are you paying for experience or are you paying for, you know, time on the keyboard?
Yeah, exactly.
And this was, you know, I don't remember what podcast it was, but they were talking about, you know, if you have an electrician or a plumber or some other service person who comes out to your residence or your business, you know, even if they just flip a switch, unless you happen to get, you know, somebody nice that day, that's an hour.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
That's the truck cost to roll out. So, you know, I think it's the perception of service of, well, all you did was just uncheck this box. Well, yes, but I knew which box to uncheck.
I, and I, that,
That's a hard line. That's a hard line to navigate for us, and I struggle with that.
I'm going to take the Matt Rainey approach, and this is the way that I like to do it. Is you know,
I like that.
If it's a yes or no answer, then you know there's no charge. If it's anything else, now I will tell you that even in his business, a password reset literally takes like 2 minutes. A password reset, he charges minimum a half hour.
Okay, and so he doesn't do an hour. He'll do half an hour.
Exactly. So I think you can, whether you want to go in 15-minute increments, if that makes you feel more comfortable, or half-hour increments, I would say for doing what we do, and if you really believe in the skills and different things that you have, I would say a half hour is fair for really any type of, you know, service that's going to get the customer back into their computer, get them up and running, and get them on with their business of, you know, documenting things, building widgets, whatever it is. We're helping them to get to the point so that they can get on with whatever it is they need to do for their business, or, you know, even their residential, whether it's be on Facebook and look at the grandkids, you know, pictures or whatever.
I had a customer that very situation came up a couple of weeks ago. We had set up a remote session. She lives on the other side of town. Actually, no, she moved. She's in Florida. I'm in Ohio. So we set up a remote session, and she was complaining that everything on her screen was just black, and she couldn't do her browsing anymore, and it was just terrible. So I remote in. It's a Vista machine. You know, sorry to knock Vista. I know you love Vista, but
I've never had a problem with Vista. I don't know what people are talking about, but whatever.
There was no problem with Vista in this instance. Somehow she had turned on the high contrast display settings.
Oh, yes.
So I knew which box to check. And so I set it back to, I don't know, classic or whatever it was. It took longer to set up the Instant House Call connection than for me to make the fix. And I felt badly of, how much am I going to charge her?
Right.
I mean, she's a longstanding customer. She's moved to out of state, and we set up a remote session. So as long as I was there, I, you know, did a full tune up and cleaned up her machine and updated everything, and, you know, everything that I would have done, and I filled the hour.
So exactly.
I could have gotten off the phone and charged her amount, but I ended up charging her the same amount, but I gave her an hour's worth of service in addition to solving her display problem.
I think that's a good way to look at it. As long as you're giving the value, and yes, you know, if you're going to, even if you roll out to a customer's house and, you know, you're there, let's say it is a 10 minute fix or 15 minute fix. And if you, and, you know, you do some extra things while you're there to fill up that hour, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that goes a long way for customer satisfaction. And you're not losing anything. The customer's not losing anything because you're getting your full hourly rate, and, you know, everybody goes away happy.
I agree. And also I find that when that happens, they will think of other questions. Oh, you know what? As long as you're here, I keep getting this, you know, this alert or this warning, or how do I do, you know, XYZ in email? You know, it gives the customer another opportunity to remember something that maybe they have forgotten or didn't realize. Oh yeah, you know what? As long as he's here, I've been having this problem, so I'm going to ask him or her. You know, and I think, again, I agree with you. I think it goes a long way to give that value to the customer, to provide the service that we do.
Absolutely. Very cool. Well, I think we've covered a lot of stuff here today, and you've brought the goods as usual, a lot of good information, a lot of good stories, and, you know, different things and tools that people can use. So I'm sure people will get a lot of use out of this. But if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
Sure. Well, everybody out there listening to the podcast, also, especially if you know people in the karaoke business that may have thousands and thousands of files, you know who to come to now. you can find me on my website, which is sohotechcolumbus.com. I have a contact form, or you can just email me. It's rberger@sohotechcolumbus.com.
Great. Well, I thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us today.
Great. Thanks so much.
No problem. You guys can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you want to leave a voicemail, you can leave us a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. If you guys could, leave us a rating and review over on iTunes. This will help more people discover us. You guys can also help support the Podnest Network. Next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnest.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. It puts a little change in our pockets to bring you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.